And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, Friday is here, everybody. One Bills Live is the show you are listening to.
RJ Day.
And should be listening to for the next 2 hours. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And yes, it is RJ night. You are right at the Sabres game. Sabres Predators tonight at 7. In case you didn't hear, and if you've been listening to us, you've heard this, get in your seats early. It's a pregame ceremony starting at 6:40 p.m. So make your plans accordingly to get in your seats promptly so you don't miss any of the festivities. Steve was laughing earlier because I am completely riveted to the World Cup draw, which is happening right now. As they're picking ping pong balls out of bowls in Qatar to select the teams.
It is the most slow-moving sports event you will ever – it's worse than baseball.
It's slower than the Oscars.
It's slower than the Oscars. It is slower than curling.
Yeah.
It's slower than – glaciers would have racing stripes compared to the way this pace this thing is moving.
For those that might be interested, all we know at this point is that the U.S. is in the same group as England. The other two teams in their group have yet to be chosen. But I will be happy to update everybody as we move along today.
I know this. Soccer isn't for everybody, but at this day and age, most people have been exposed to a little bit of soccer. Certainly, it's a great youth sport here in America, but we're nowhere near where Europe is with the level of interest they have. I get it. And I'm just glad we're not embarrassed that we didn't get in. You know, we made it in actually seemingly fairly easily. All we had to do, you know, we got to the last game and we couldn't have this catastrophic collapse and we're in. So that was very nice. So we're kind of cruising in better than – we didn't get in the last one. And so it's nice to be there. And I'm looking forward to it because my off sport is anything other than football, right? In the off sports – the national team, women's national team, men's national team, that's what I sign up for. And so when the men's national team is going to play in this World Cup, I'm going to be there.
Good.
I'm going to be there.
You're going to be on board.
I am way on board.
You're not going to be in Qatar.
I'm not going to be in Qatar, no. I am on board is what I'm saying. Same thing with the women's national team. I am all about it. The Olympics, In fact, I think for me, I didn't think about it until this very moment. For me, World Cup and... for men's and women's, has surpassed, in my interest level, has surpassed the Olympics for the first time in my life.
The national soccer teams?
Yep.
Steve, you're going to make me cry.
Because I grew up, and I was there, I was 10 years old in 1972 in Munich when all that stuff happened.
Oh, yeah.
I was, you know, and then the 68 Olympics, I was just old enough to think, wow,
Bob
it was
Beeman.
Really cool. All of that. The 76 Olympics in... Was it
Montreal?
Montreal. I was there for all of that, so it was a big deal for me growing up. And then over the decades, it's faded because of the way it's covered and the way we consume sports 24/7 now. So I think I got to be honest. I'm more interested in the and I like the Olympics. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to poo-poo them. I they're great, but my interest now is women's and men's national team in soccer. I'm kind of way into it because of the elevated nature of the way for my kids they all played it and I watched and I got a little bit more of an understanding and I get the world stage of it.
Oh yeah.
I'm kind of all about it.
The only difference this year is this is a tournament that is typically played in June, usually wraps up around July 4th weekend.
Can't do that in the Middle East.
Cannot do that in Qatar, where at that time of the year it's 120 degrees. Players would literally pass out on the field. So the tournament doesn't begin until late November. I believe it's the Sunday before Thanksgiving is when it starts, and it runs through most of December. I think it might end right before Christmas. I want to say December 21st is the final. So it's going to be a little bit different. And I got to tell you, I'm a little annoyed by it because I'm used to having a lighter schedule when the World Cup is on so I can fully fully invested. And now it's going to be during football season.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a little harder to catch games and stuff. I imagine I'm going to be DVRing things.
You already have, you know, people chiming in, starting to talk smack already. England's in our group, I guess, right?
Yeah, and Iran so Iran was just added.
Oh, so it's
Iran,
England?
Iran, I guess is
Iran,
how you say it. And the
United
U.S.
States,
so we got one more. That's not a bad group
and
so
Great
far.
Britain.
No killers yet. So that's good.
Yeah, Brazil and like Germany. Could Germany get dropped in our laps?
No, Germany is already in with Spain, so that's good.
And Mexico and Argentina. Was it Mexico and Argentina are in one group?
Yeah,
which is kind of what it is. Basically, it's the AFC West. You know, you get these good teams that are playing.
Well, what they call it in the World Cup is the group of death.
The group of death. So, yeah, we dodged that. It seemingly.
Yeah, so we'll see where it goes from here, but I'll keep you posted when the group is finalized.
All right.
There are some interesting things that happened in free agency after we got off the air yesterday. Some big money is still being thrown around. Bobby Wagner signs for 5 years, $50 million. Not bad for a 32-year-old linebacker with the Rams. He is an L.A. native, so he's going home quite literally. To play for the former NFC West rival of his Seahawks. I doubt he's going to see all 5 years of that deal, Steve, but his price tag came down just enough where the Rams could accommodate it. And knowing they were willing to commit far more money to a guy like Von Miller, they were able to come up with the money for Bobby Wagner, who I think is a pretty, even now, is still a pretty big impact player. I mean,
he's probably one of the
best linebackers of this generation.
Here's the thing. When you play in the NFL for a long time, you get better because nothing surprises you. You're just all over it. You see things over and over again, year after year. You watch yourself on film. You learn things. So the more experience you have, the harder it is to fool you, and the better, the more out in front of things mentally you become. The problem is, as we all know, once you get to that point, you got nothing left to help you play, right? Because you just get beat up. But Bobby Wagner has been one of those guys that has continued to play at a high level. And, you know, these guys, you can just tell when you start even watching film. And I remember when I played, you get these guys, oh, my gosh, the guy's always right where you don't want him to be, you know. Bobby Wagner's one of those guys. And he's going to help the Rams. He's going to help them.
The Bills will see him, obviously, because the Bills play the Rams. Once Von Miller signed with the Bills, I tweeted this out. I said, if the network executives weren't asking for it already and the league is under a rock, they would be foolish not to have the season kickoff game be Bills at Rams week 1, Thursday night, week 1. Like, that is the kickoff game. Because, you know, you already had the Bills, who were considered to be a true contender for the whole dang thing last year. Josh Allen emerges as a truly elite talent, one of the best three quarterbacks in football. And now you take the guy who helped propel the Rams to a Super Bowl title in Von Miller, now on the Bills roster. I mean, there are just too many storylines to ignore. That's got to be the kickoff game. And I know we'll talk about that more when we get closer to schedule release time in early May. But, man, that is... That is a gimme,
well,
as far as I'm
concerned.
You can
say that, but the Rams have got a lot of good teams on their schedule and a lot of tasty matchups because they're the world champions, for one thing. But they're in a competitive division, and there's a lot of star power out there. I mean, they've got the Chiefs as well. So there's some, you know, certainly the Bills are right up there. And it makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels because the Bills, in a lot of power rankings, leapfrogged the Rams when they signed Von Miller. Let's see that right out of the gate, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
Yum, give me some.
Yeah, exactly. That's the old saying we have here on the show. That's just like chocolate pudding and rub it on my face, baby.
Yeah.
Let's go. I want it.
So that is a good ad, though, for the Rams. They're better because of that. Then there's the curious case of Antonio Brown, Steve. A guy that basically threw his uniform into the stands late last year, ran off the field on his own volition, and then was promptly released by the Bucs. And we felt, this guy will never be seen again anywhere in the NFL. Now there is this. Antonio Brown, who has claimed he has had ankle problems, now refuses to get ankle surgery, prior to signing a contract with an interested NFL club. I don't know if his agent's phone is actually ringing. But apparently he thinks there's enough interest in him where he can wait on ankle surgery until after he's signed. For a guy that's got as many warts and off-the-field issues as he has, to delay his own return to 100% health, it's just another thing. It only convinces me all the more this guy is still riding the crazy train here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you not want to get 100% healthy to at least appeal to NFL teams that are even giving you the time of day with the light of your off-field antics?
I don't know why he's waiting. That's the thing. I do not know why he's waiting to do that.
It doesn't make sense.
That doesn't make sense to me. Why would you delay that that surgery? Because nobody, I mean, the closer you get to training camp, the more you're not going to be able to take part.
Mm-hmm.
That's the crazy train. And, you know, he's got his own way of doing things. He's got his own way of – he marches to the beat of his own drummer, as we all know. And some of it seems to be out of step with polite society. But we'll see. The way he left the league, he may have said goodbye to innumerable opportunities that are down the line for him or would have been down the line for him. When he threw his jersey off and walked off the field in the middle of a game in the manner that he did, he closed the door and he didn't just burn the bridge, he detonated it. So I would be surprised if there is a team, given the flush nature of wide receivers in the National Football League and at the rate that they are being produced by the college ranks, that anybody has time for that headache. And that's what it would be to me. You know, I just, I think that I think the ship sailed. If I'm an owner of an NFL team and my GM head coach comes to me and says, and points the finger at Antonio, says, that's our guy, I would tell them in that moment, you are on thin ice. Not just with that pick, but with the rest of your responsibilities. You can't even consider that to me. But I've never had that kind of power over anybody. So I don't know. But I don't think you take that chance. No. I think that is an enormous roll of the dice.
And if you think that's strange with Antonio Brown, we can do you one better. Because at age 48, Terrell Owens has decided that he's going to try to play football in some way, shape, or form. He's coming out of retirement to play in the fan-controlled football league, which was a league that got off the ground last year. And I'm not going to pretend to know everything about this league, but it is considered a professional league. So the league debuted last year. He's joining a team that includes, of all people, Steve, Johnny Manziel. It's 7-on-7 football. Fans call the plays and make the rosters. Teams in the league play a 7-week schedule, and the games are streamed on Fubo TV, and all the games are held in the state of Georgia. Games last about an hour, fields 50 yards by 35 yards, 10-yard end zones. And the league has doubled from 4 teams to 8 here in the second season. So Owens wants to prove – I mean, we've seen the social media videos, Steve, of him running 40 times. Oh, he's still running 4.45 or whatever. So we shall see what comes of it. But
– Right. I'm not
– Does anybody care is the question.
I don't want to watch 7-on-7. I mean, I get it. It's fun, it's more than just a weekend hockey league for guys over 40. It's not that, because they do have some athletes out there, but it's not quite beach volleyball, that kind of thing. I don't care. I mean, I think it's good for you.
More power to him, I guess, if he can do it. He's always in great shape.
You're 48 and you're in shape. Congratulations. I am not. So, good for you. If he can make it, good. Hey, I hope he can make a living doing it. Good for him. I think it's just a call for attention, and you know, let's leave it at that.
We go from one receiver to another to yet another. Did you see Tyreek Hill has already put in a request to be the team's punt returner for the Dolphins in addition to being the receiver?
Yeah, I did see that. That makes sense to me.
That could be a headache for the Bills in terms of their coverage units, as we know. But I think there's going to be a healthy competition there. Because you remember who their punt returner was last year? It was Jaylen Waddle.
Yeah, he's good.
He's pretty good.
And he's fresh legs. But I – yeah.
Maybe you have him split time? How do you do that if you're Mike
McDaniel? If you got guys up front, you can put them both back there and take it, you know, and use them that way. Tyreek is – punting the ball to him is a problem because when he can outrun the angles. And you've got to have 11 guys on the coverage unit that know how to hem a guy who's really, really fast in.
Yeah.
You got to get out in front of him. You got to cut him off. You got to force him to stop and go the other direction. You got to use your teammates in a way that, you know, allows them to hem him in as well. It's just it's a real sheepdog mentality when you've got a fast guy like that out there. You've got to kind of just hold your ground and keep leverage on him. And you like almost have to over leverage and give him the cutback on you rather than let him around the edge. And then you got to rely on your other guys to fill the gaps. I mean, it takes a lot of practice, takes a lot of confidence in your coverage teams. And if you get the wrong kind of punt to him and your punter makes a mistake, you're seeing what you're seeing on the screen right now. I mean, he's flashing the peace sign at you and he's going to the end zone.
Yeah.
So
I wonder how Mike McDaniel's going to handle that. Because you've got – I mean – when a new coach comes in, every job is open anyway. But Waddle did a nice job in that role for the Dolphins last year. And he's no slow guy. He runs a 4.39, you know. So, to me, I think that's an interesting decision to be made there. And I think there's also the element of overtaxing one or the other. You don't want to overtax one of those guys and have him stoink a hammy or something. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'll be interested to see how McDaniel handles that decision because you have two pretty talented guys and maybe you split the difference and have them switch off. Makes right. It harder for opponents to prepare for because now you got to worry about two guys instead of one guy.
Yeah, and there's really – it's hard to – at this level, it's hard to not consider who's back there when you're punting, no matter who it is, whatever team it is. Because every team's got a couple of guys that does it. Even the Buffalo Bills, you got Isaiah McKenzie, you got Marquez Stevenson. Those guys are a little different. Of course, then you got Micah Hyde. He's a little different when he goes back to field punt. So you've got those considerations as you're preparing to play the teams, and you got to have a plan or at least a thought process for that. And obviously Tyreek Hill changes that in a dramatic way if he's back there and is a consideration.
Yeah. So that is NFL news and notes. And today, obviously, being Friday, means the OBL Friday fan mailbag is open, where we answer your most pressing questions on the Bills, the league at large, maybe the draft, now that it's coming up fast here. And you can ask your questions by going to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or you can hit us up on Twitter at @1BillsLive. Coming up, second hour of the show, our good friend Greg Cosell from NFL Films. He'll be here to talk cornerback prospects with us. He's been crunching the film for the past week and kind of shed some light on what he thinks on some of the better cornerback prospects in the draft. So we look forward to that. And then final half hour of the show, the latest installment of Tasker's Teammate. It's been a while.
Wow.
So we've got the latest installment coming your way in the final half hour of the show. But in the meantime, we go to the phones at 803-0550, open line for you there, and we lead off with Izzy in North Carolina. Izzy, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, Stavern. Yeah, it's nice to talk to you guys. Well, I went on the Bills website to see the latest news, and there's a picture of a uniform and a helmet with a chicken wing design.
Right.
So that's got to be an April Fool's joke.
You think, Izzy?
I think.
Okay.
Well, you're an astute dude.
You're too smart for us. We couldn't fool you on April Fool's Day.
We did get some people.
We did get some people. It was pretty funny.
The outrage was real for a minute.
So for those that don't know, and thanks for the call, Izzy. For those that don't know, our social media department on Twitter, and I'm assuming Instagram, put up a tweet earlier today saying, new uniforms for 2022. There are city uniform edition, and it's basically chicken wing color, numbers, and accent colors with a black jersey and a helmet with a charging buffalo that is wing-like.
Yeah,
with,
it looks like a charging
with
chicken
with a streak
wing
of blue cheese.
Yeah.
Down the side.
I'll
where
tell you what, they did a nice job with it. I'll say that.
A couple of people got totally duped.
The best part of it is Twitter was true to its outrage in its nature. it reacted violently and immediate before anybody looked at the calendar. So there was a couple of screenshots you could get of the outrage about the Bills going to black and orange and chicken wing logos. It was
that was pretty good.
Special.
I enjoyed it.
You knew it would happen because that's just the way it is out there. But,
well, you're always going to get somebody, right?
It was great. It was absolutely great.
They got a few people pretty good on that with the quote-unquote city uniform. So all in good fun. All in good fun. Everybody gets duped some April Fools, inevitably. Let's go back to the phones. We go to Sean in Lackawanna next. What you got for us, Sean?
How you guys doing? Good evening. I hear Vegas right now has Buffalo and then Tampa Bay in the rankings for Super Bowl. How much does that mix up things if Brady does get traded to Miami? I hear Rumorville. I mean, you got Waddle, Tyreek Hill, and then you throw in Brady. I want Miami opening game.
Brady ain't getting traded.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting moved at all.
That's an April 1st.
Yeah, there were rumors before today about Brady potentially being on the move to Miami, and everybody and anybody that was asked at the owners' meetings flatly denied it. We know that's not necessarily set in stone when people say that. Stranger things have happened. And with the offseason we've had in this league, I guess you can't rule anything out, Sean, but I would be very, very surprised if that's what took place. And I say that from this standpoint primarily. Brady has re-signed with the Bucs, came out of retirement, and then we just saw Bruce Arians move upstairs to the front office, and part of what he said yesterday intrigued me. He said, once I knew Tom was coming back, I thought that was – I was leaving the team in good hands to hand off to Todd Bowles. So I really I'd really be surprised if he went anywhere, but I have seen those same rumors out there, Sean, so you're not out of line with him.
Roger that. Let's hope not. I don't want to play him again twice.
Yeah, amen to that, brother. Thanks for the call. Have a good weekend. We move on from Sean to Bob in Buffalo. Bob, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here, guys.
Go ahead.
I had a couple of questions for you.
Yeah.
One is, what's your thoughts on the Bills possibly drafting a punter third, fourth round this year, coming up with a gem like they did with Bass? And the other one, I'd like to hear your feedback. I don't know how much you guys had a chance to follow it, given the game times, but there was a very great lack of the media coverage for the U.S. Paralympics this year. It was about a month ago or so, yet the Canadian media did a great, great job, especially considering there was a first for the U.S. Paralympians and the fact that they won their fourth straight men's sled hockey gold medal with a 5-0 whitewash of the Canadian team.
Yeah,
I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Bob.
My phone's cutting in and out.
Yeah, no problem, Bob. Thanks for the call. I'll say first, on the subject of drafting a punter, I think it is entirely possible that the Bills use one of their picks on a punter. I think it's coming on day three if it happens. I don't think they're going to be using a third or fourth round draft choice on a punter. I know there are some pretty good ones in this year's pool.
Well,
but I don't know. I mean, Tyler Bass was a sixth round pick, right, and he's an all world kicker as far as I'm concerned.
There, I think this kid called the punt god, what's his heights or something? I can't remember his name.
Matt Ariza or?
Ariza, yes. I apologize, but he's got a chance of getting picked high.
Yeah.
Because of, like, what did I say? It's a nickname. His nickname will get him noticed, and it'll take, if it'll take the heat off the club for picking a punter like in the third round or the second round or the fourth round, whatever he's picked. I've told Miss Brownie, I have this argument and this theory that if you've got an awesome nickname in the draft, like Honey Badger or Primetime or the Playmaker or you name it, the Bus, you know, Broadway Joe, if you've got an awesome nickname in the NFL draft, you're automatically getting picked at least a round higher than you normally would. So this punter has got a chance. I don't know that the Bills are going to take him that high, but this guy can go. And he's a testament to what has happened to the National Football League when you get guys at certain positions who inspire young kids to take it up at an early age, and they get really good, and they outshine the guys that came before them that are in the Hall of Fame. That's the way life is, and the league is starting to see guys like that. Shane Leckler, for goodness sake, his numbers make Ray Guy's numbers look pedestrian at best.
Yeah,
but he was inspired by Ray Guy. That kind of stuff. Those things happen, and now they're still happening in the NFL. Yes, there could be a punter taken in the mid rounds, maybe even higher. We've seen kickers taken in the first round. We've seen punters taken in the first round. It could happen this year.
Could. I don't think
the Bills
in the first round.
The Bills aren't taking anybody like that at 25, I'll say that.
I don't think there'll be a punter or kicker in round one. You want to talk about day two, I'll listen, because there are some pretty accomplished punters. I just don't see the punter – I don't see the Bills putting that much stock in drafting a punter that high because they don't intend to be punting all that much.
Yeah.
Not to mention the fact that most teams are punting less because more teams than ever went for it on fourth down
right.
last
nobody,
year.
I mean, nobody expects the Bills to go out and not punt. I mean, although we had a couple of games where they were close this last year and late in the season. I get all that, and it's fun. But, yeah, they need a guy who can air it out and do it consistently. They may take the guy if he's there in the fourth or the fifth or the sixth or the seventh or the fifth, sixth, seventh, sixth, seventh, seventh, whatever. Whatever round he's available, if they want him. Because I'll tell you this, he'll make the team. Mm. If they get him, he'll make the team.
All right. And then your other comment about the Paralympic Games. Yes, it does not get enough coverage. I know that NBC did carry it on some of their sister channels, like the USA Network, and they had some other ones. I think they even had some competitions on MSNBC. And it is very compelling. I will tell you a story. When I was 12 years old, the 1984 Olympic Games were obviously in the U.S., they held the Paralympic Games. I don't think they had a formal Paralympic Games at the same Olympic site like they do now. But back then, they had the World Disabled Games the same time. Countries were obviously represented, sent representatives and athletes. And that year, they held it on Long Island. And my parents took me and my sister to the World Disabled Games. I don't know what spawned that. I remember I had just done a school report on prosthetics. I had an uncle who was a World War II vet, lost part of his leg, had a prosthesis. And so I think, I don't know, my mom was trying to kind of push that whole thing at that time. And so we went, and it was, I got to tell you, it was entertaining. We were watching wheelchair basketball and a bunch of other events. And the technology, like they didn't even have those blades that they run on now. It's just amazing, the competition level. And I, you know, as a 12-year-old, I was really taken by it. I enjoyed the competition. I was into it. I remember I was cheering alongside some Australian fans that were there. I learned their whole Aussie, Aussie, Aussie chant and everything. It's a cool deal. And there are really, really good athletes performing in the Paralympics. There is no question about it. And I believe, as he mentioned, one of the sled hockey guys is a local.
Right.
And they won again. So that's great. It doesn't get the coverage it probably deserves, and it's unfortunate. But at least I would, and I don't know if this is any consolation, but it's nice to know there is an outlet for the people that want to support it can go and watch and support it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you can't find it, so I'm with you.
It was on the USA Network. They carried almost everything wire to wire. because NBC paid for the rights to it. So they're going to air it somewhere. They weren't airing it on NBC, but they were airing it on Peacock, their streaming channel. They were airing it on USA Network and a couple other places. And I did catch a little of it when I was channel surfing one night.
There is a slight difference when you start watching Olympic sports and like golf, the golf stuff, other sports like that. In the NFL, we get in tune. And I'd say this, Bob. In the NFL, you've got ESPN, CBS, NBC, the NFL Network. All these networks air it all the time. But when you get into sports other than that, the one broadcast entity, in this case would be NBC, nobody else will cover it and nobody else will even mention it because they don't want to tell anybody else that it's on and another thing. So the rest of the media outlets, aside from NBC and Peacock, they won't even talk about it because the rights are with another entity. So they won't give it a commercial so the people will leave their platform and go over and watch it on NBC or Peacock. So when you get into other sports, not like football, the conversation is limited only to the network that it's on. The same thing with PGA. CBS is the only people who will talk about the PGA Golf or the Masters. Now you've got ESPN involved in that, but you can see the difference. When you get the Paralympics, only one entity is covering it, and they're doing a nice job of it, but no other entities will talk about it. That's why the media coverage is what it is. Sometimes you feel like it's left out, and the reason is they don't want to cover it on behalf of NBC on their network.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the conflict you get with other sports entities that you don't get with the NFL.
Yeah. We have to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. Gary on a cell and others holding at 803-0550. Hang tight. We'll get to you when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back. One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. For those of you that are interested, the World Cup draw is over, and the U.S. is in Group B with England, Iran, and then the European playoff winner, which is a little convoluted right now. There are supposed to be two teams that were slated to square off in a playoff in June, but they don't have one of the finalists yet to play against Wales. Those two teams will advance to play Wales, and then the winner of that game will join the Group B in the World Cup. So Wales is awaiting the winner of Scotland versus Ukraine. So now you know why that game is postponed, because obviously Ukraine is in the midst of a war of aggression on the part of Russia. So there are some things to be ironed out there. So it'll either be one of those three teams, Wales, Ukraine, or Scotland, joining the group with the U.S., Iran, and England in Group B of the World Cup, which will be played in November and December later this year. Let's get back to the phones here on an OBL Friday fan mailbag, and we go to Gary on a cell next. Gary, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing good.
I think I'm turning the page to the draft. I'm sure you guys are, too.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you guys what you're thinking as far as positions. I got like four or five in my head. I'm thinking corner, obviously, linebacker depth, maybe a runner if he's there and he's worth the draft pick. Not in the first round. I'm thinking second, third, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some guard depth. You know, I know our offensive line is pretty much intact, but, you know, you can always use offensive linemen.
Right.
I want to know what you guys think.
Yeah.
This is what you guys are thinking.
First off, Gary, I'm going to suggest that you listen to our Bills by the Numbers podcast this weekend on any podcast platform you use. You can find it. Just look up Bills by the Numbers. We have Jim Nagy on from the Senior Bowl. He's the executive director of the Senior Bowl and is really plugged in. He was a scout for 18 years in the league. Had some really good stuff to offer on that subject, so I'll point you there, but I'll also help you now. And I would tend to agree with most of what you laid out there. I think that the Bills do want corner and wide receiver depth at the very least because of some of the talent that went out the door. Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley. They did re-sign Isaiah McKenzie, and they got Jamison Crowder in free agency. But I think they still want – I get the sense they still want something else to add to that mix, maybe not at the top of the draft, but at some point. And then Steve and I have talked a lot about they do need a corner because they haven't added a veteran corner in free agency after losing Levi Wallace. So that would seem to spell, from a numbers standpoint, a need to add somebody there. But interior O-line, though, Steve,
right,
is an area,
that.
Too.
They could go for an interior offensive lineman either for depth or to compete for the off-guard spot away from Saffold, the guy they just signed. And I agree. I think, yeah, sure, running back later in the rounds, linebacker later in the rounds, okay. I'm all about a corner. And this is how the roster sits today. This is April 1st. And we got another month of free agency, and there's guys that, like Patrick Peterson just signed a one-year deal with Minnesota. A guy like that, like Patrick Peterson would have been a great addition, I think, for this group because he's an incredible athlete. And he had a lot of experience, and I think he's still got some gas in the tank. He'd add a credible option away from Tre'Davious White and some depth. A guy like that. So we don't have a guy like that. We may sign one. Like we could be signing one right now. We don't know about it. But as the roster sits right now, I think corner is the number is at 25. And maybe if they trade up, it's to get a corner that they like. Then I go wide receiver and interior offensive line. I think it's corner, wide out, interior O-line. Those are my three. And the only reason I say wide out is because there's numbers there. There's guys there that can make a difference. And I think when you get down into day two, late day two, and day three of this draft, I don't know if there's going to be a player in the college ranks who is good enough to come in and walk onto the Buffalo Bills roster, Super Bowl favorites, and make it. And if I'm doing that, I want guys in this draft who can walk out and maybe contribute at some point during the season. You need guys that can play. And I don't know that in the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round, we got two sixths, I don't know that you can get guys after 130th in this draft that can make a difference. So, you know, take all those picks, bundle them up, and move from 25 to 10 or to 15, and just know that the guy from 130th on down, it's going to be a hard road to make this squad.
Yeah.
So for me, that's my strategy. Take a swing on a couple of guys who've got the physical traits to play in the National Football League for the Buffalo Bills. Because once you get down past 130, this roster is too deep and talented for some guy in the fifth. Matt Milano is not going to come out of this draft. Matt Milano's not going to come out. You're not going to find a guy in the fifth round of this draft who's going to come out and play like Matt Milano has, a Pro Bowl level.
At any position?
And be a starter. Yeah, that's right. Now,
how do you know that?
I just think our roster's too good.
Oh, you're saying to come here and do that.
To come here and do that.
Okay.
I think the roster here in Buffalo is too good. You may get a guy who's a guard who could come in and do that, but I think you're looking for that higher in the draft anyway. So that's my thought. I'm with you totally, Gary. That's a good call, by the way. I am at corner, wide receiver, interior offensive line in that order. But once you get past the first three picks of this draft, now I'm talking about Buffalo Bills drafts, you know, the 89th pick is the third pick. I don't know if you're going to find anybody that can play, that can make this squad, a 53.
They're talking about receiver depth. You could get a starting caliber player as late as round four. Now, I know you got talent here, but if that's the case, you might have some pretty good players you can land there.
Okay.
But Gary also mentioned running back and linebacker depth, and I would agree wholeheartedly on the linebacker depth issue. We got to remember, Tremaine Edmonds is in his walk year. This is the last year of his deal. And will the Bills' salary cap structure support giving someone like Dawson Knox a contract extension, presumably giving a contract extension to Stephon Diggs, who is now grossly underpaid, among other things. And then pay Tremaine Edmonds a giant second contract on top of it? I don't know if they can get all that done. So you may need to get a linebacker in the pipeline sooner rather than later. Gary also mentioned running back, you know, some kind of difference maker that is a significant upgrade from somebody like Devin Singletary. And he said he wouldn't do it in the first round. I probably wouldn't either. But I guess if the cupboard's bare in terms of value across your position board and you got a first-round back staring at you, maybe you consider it a 25, but I'd be more inclined to look in round two, round three, somewhere there. If you feel you can get an every down back that can pick up the blitz and knows pass protection, which is probably more important than anything else with your quarterback being Josh Allen. Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Sean in Niagara Falls. What do you got for us, Sean?
How's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hope you're having a good day.
What do you got for us?
Okay. All right. So, I'm curious. Tinsel, Ed Oliver, and refresh my memory, who else did we just sign?
Daquan Jones.
We have D-tackle depth in our room at all.
Well, you got Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, Tim Settle, Jordan Phillips, and then they re-signed the kid they picked up last year, Ilyanku, who gave him some nice snaps down the stretch, but is a rotational player at best. I'll give you that. And then they have the practice squad kid, Brandon Bryant. Okay. So you got six.
All right.
Could you upgrade? Yeah. But I don't think – you're not in a positional emergency situation, I would say. Do you feel differently?
I think I'm the only one on the planet who wants Jordan Davis so bad.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
I'll hang up and listen to you guys.
I get it. There's no question he's a physical anomaly. I will say this. I don't think he's going to be there at 25. I think he goes in the top 20 somewhere. There will be concerns about his endurance because he played only about half the snaps at Georgia. And what teams, what opponents in college would do when they saw him on the field is they would raise the tempo. They'd go hurry up.
They'd
to get him
things.
Gassed.
Two things. They'd raise the tempo and they'd throw it because he has no pass rush. Even at that size and athleticism, he doesn't rush the passer well. So teams would counter that by running the ball, by going fast tempo offensively and then throwing the ball. Obviously, and he was also playing in front of Devontae Wyatt and some other jokers who were pretty darn good. So he was on a really good team, and you're right. He is a physical dude, 6'6", 342, and can scoot.
He ran a 4.78.
Yeah, he's unbelievably athletic, and he long jumped a ton too. So, yes, he is all of that, but there are questions about his motor and his pass rush.
And keeping his weight down,
and
too.
And his weight. Georgia has made it clear they wanted him to play at about 330, and there was just no chance.
He was closer to 350, they said, for most of his playing career.
Yeah, his family, his mom, and whoever, his whole they go wherever he goes. And I don't think there's anybody in his inner circle. This is just my impression. There's nobody in his inner circle tells him no. So when he bellies up to the table, they give him what he wants, and he has a hard time keeping his weight.
They had a
control.
Nutritionist at Georgia working with him on a daily basis.
And they just
couldn't
do it.
It was a constant monitor effort.
They couldn't
try to
keep
his weight down.
They couldn't get it done. So he's got some self-discipline issues, and that's never a good thing for a pro athlete,
especially a big one. We got to take a break here. More of your phone calls next. It's One Bills Live. We'll see you in a second. All right, welcome back. It is an OBL Friday fan mailbag, taking your questions and calls on the Bills, the league at large, the NFL draft, what have you. And we go right back to the phones. And joining us now is Rick in Plattsburgh. Rick, what's going on? You still got snow up there in Plattsburgh?
I'm in Prattsburgh, not Platt.
Oh, Prattsburgh, okay.
Prattsburgh's in the Finger Lakes.
Yeah, there you go,
outside
okay.
That area by Cuca Lake.
Yep,
anyways,
yep.
Yeah, it's snowing a little bit, but the ground's green.
Gotcha.
I'm heading back to Florida tomorrow, so it should be better.
Oh, God bless you. What do you got for us?
Yeah. Well, I just... sitting here listening to stuff on show, and I think a perfect trade would be Stephon or Edmonds to Dallas for Diggs. It would save us big money in re-signing him. I think Diggs is still on his rookie contract. He wants to play with his brother, take care of our need for a cornerback, draft the best linebacker coming out in the first round, and I think we're set with two rookie contracts and. Yeah. No big payday coming.
Yeah, I bet you are, and I'll bet Dallas would jump at that, right? No.
I don't know.
Dallas is not going to – no.
I can't see them parting with a corner that just got them 10 picks last year So that's part,
2 years ago, right?
Last season.
Drafted in 20?
Well, yeah, but Diggs last year got him 10 interceptions. I think he led the league. I can't see them parting with that kid. That's number one. And sorry, Rick, thanks for the call. We got to get rolling here pretty soon. Part two, if you're the Bills, this is not a trade that you make because you're not improving the other position in that's in desperate need of an upgrade. You're okay right now at corner. I wouldn't say you're set. But if you take Tremaine Edmonds out of the equation in the middle of your defense, to think you could plug a rookie in there and be just as good, I think is a little foolhardy for these reasons. One, the chance of finding an athletic freak the level of Tremaine Edmonds, hard to do. Two, he's got to run your entire defensive scheme, which Edmonds has called for each of the last 4 years. And to have him and to expect him to execute it at a high level in a go-for-it year, I think is a little misguided, quite frankly. And so because of those reasons, I don't think what you gain makes up for what you lose.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a convoluted. There's no way Dallas trades that corner, Diggs. No way. No way. For Tremaine Edmonds or anybody else. He's going nowhere. He plays a premier position in the NFL, came in as a rookie, and knocked it out of the park. He's not going anywhere.
Whether they can keep him beyond this year or not, he's not going anywhere this year. I'd be very, very surprised. You would have to really bowl the Bills over for them to take the middle right. piece in their defense.
And I get it. Tremaine takes some heat for the way he plays, and you know, he doesn't play in a normal old-fashioned defense where the guy runs to the ball, makes tackles. He's a pass defending linebacker. He can rush the passer and drop into coverage. Run game, he can go side to side. He'll run the guy down, but he's rarely, you know, up in the backfield like people like to see. It's a different game now, and people are still getting used to why Tremaine Edmonds is a starting linebacker in the NFL and not a guy like Ray Lewis. He plays differently because he's asked to play differently. So people, and I get it, people say, yeah, we'll trade Tremaine Edmonds for A, B, or C. It's not that easy to replace that guy, trust me. He's been to the Pro Bowl multiple times because he's a problem out there. Teams are troubled by his presence in the Bills' defense. Don't fool yourself.
We have to take a break here because when we return, we're going to be joined by our good friend from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, who's been crunching and grinding on the tape. Cornerback prospects, we discuss with him next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Friday. And you know what that means. It means we're joined by senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, to talk a little bit about the draft prospects. Let's do it. Greg, how you doing?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing all right. Cornerbacks is where we're headed this week. And, you know, you've been grinding on those guys for a little bit, working the tape. And, you know, Sauce Gardner is widely considered the cream of the crop here. My question to you is, what do you think makes him the cream of the crop? What part of his skill set stands out the most?
I think ultimately there's a couple of things. Number one, he's got great length. He's almost 6'3", and he's rangy and athletic. And we know that tall, long, rangy, athletic corners, and he's competitive, that's what everybody wants. If you could, you know, draw it up, that's what everybody wants. So he fits that profile exceptionally well. he's played a ton of press man coverage because he was the boundary corner at Cincinnati. So he always played to the short side of the field. So he played a ton of press man, and he actually played almost zero man because they would take the safety to that side, who's actually a very good prospect himself, Brian Cook. He would be the boundary safety, and very rarely did he help Gardner. So Gardner essentially played zero man coverage to the boundary. He's super aggressive, super competitive. He played the two kinds of press man, what we call mirror match press man, where you don't put your hands on the receiver, and physical jam press man. And he was really, really sticky. Great length in height, great arm length. To me, he can play anything you ask him to play, you know, man, zone. I think he's probably the top corner prospect in this draft.
I think there's the headline. Steve's big on nicknames, Greg, and the headline is Sauce is Sticky.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Greg, we can get into this later, but I'll let you in on the conversation just so you can prepare. I'm thinking a nickname is good for a greatly enhanced draft prospect. If you got a great nickname, teams are going to get you because they can sell it to their fans better and their owners. Sauce Gardner is going to go really high in this draft because his nickname is Sauce.
Just for that reason.
Whether
you like him or not.
If I'm a player's agent, I get the guy a catchy nickname, and that's job one.
Pump it up.
That's job one.
Well, here's the important question of the day. Does he actually legally change his name to Sauce? You know, just
if I'm him,
like,
listen. If it gets me from say 23 in the first round down to 6 in the first round, I would have had that paperwork ready.
Well, he's gonna be a top 10 pick anyway. So
I think the guy.
Yeah, he is.
I'm telling you,
he'll be the first corner off the board, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Who's going to be the second? Who's going to be the second corner off the board if you're the GM?
That's going to be very interesting. Boy, you know, I think the feeling seems to be it'll be Derek Stingley, but I think Derek Stingley's tape, and I even went back and watched his tape in that great first season of 2019.
Yeah,
and obviously it was better, but. You know, he certainly has all the physical and athletic traits that you look for in an outside corner. He's another guy that has good size. He's athletic. He's fluid. At times, he looks very sudden in his movement. The one thing that he has, being a former receiver, that is certainly an important trait, is he has really good ball skills and ball production, especially on vertical throws outside the numbers, which you see a lot of in the NFL. But I think there's a couple of things that need to be cleaned up. Now, it's not that they can't be. This is something I can't remember who taught me this, but somebody taught me this years ago about corners who play in press. And what he does, which you can't do in the NFL, is he has a tendency to rock back on his heels as his first reaction to the receiver's move when he's playing press. And I think you got to clean that up. I think he can get away with it in college. I'm not sure you can get away with that in the NFL.
And then the two Washington prospects are two very different corners. I mean, Kyler Gordon almost looks like a safety. While Trent McDuffie is, you know, he's getting knocked for short arms and what have you. It seems to me that McDuffie would seem to be the more polished technician, while Gordon is the more naturally gifted athlete. Not that McDuffie isn't a good athlete, but that's kind of how I see him.
That's very fair. There's actually two corners in this draft that, in my view anyway, and again, I'm not Sean McDermott or Leslie Frazier, but just having watched the Bills and relatively familiar with what they do, there's two corners that I think fit the Bills very well. One is McDuffie, and that's why I wanted to mention that, because I think McDuffie he can play press. He played mostly mirror match press, and he was very, very good at it. He's very easy with his transition, opening his hips. He also played a lot of off coverage, bail technique. I'll tell you, at Washington, because they've had this for years. There's two things they must really like their corners to be able to do because they're really good at it. Number one, they plant and drive from off coverage with explosiveness. It seems like all Washington corners can do that. And the other thing, which I know would be very important to Sean and Leslie, is they're aggressive and physical playing the run and driving downhill to tackle receivers. They're urgent and competitive. And McDuffie is very much like that. The other thing that really stood out to me on his tape, and I thought of the Bills watching him, was I thought that he did two things in zone. Great situational awareness as a zone defender. He understood down in distance and its impact on what his reaction should be. So in other words, if it's third and 10 and you're a cover two corner, you don't jump the flat route because it's third and 10. Let the guy catch the ball and go tackle him. They punt. He understood that. And then he played with his eyes and his feet really effectively in zone. He seemed to have a very good feel for route concepts based on receiver splits. So I thought McDuffie was one corner, guys, that I thought really fit potentially the Bills. And the other was not Gordon, but it's Roger McCreary from Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
Another player who, you know, his size is almost exactly the same as Tre'Davious White. And McCreary, to me, can play outside, which he did at Auburn. And he had really, really good games against LSU and their receiver, Kayshon Boutte. And when they played Alabama, in that game that Alabama won late in overtime, he matched up to Jameson Williams until Williams got hurt, and then John Metchie. And he was really good playing mirror match press man, but he can also play zone extremely well. So you're dealing with two guys, in my view, that are scheme versatile. And I think that's really important for the Bills. So those two players, as I was watching them, guys, McDuffie and McCreary, I thought that they would fit the Bills. And again, I don't know if they plan on taking a corner in the first round, trading up, whatever they want to do. But those two guys really stood out to me.
Yeah, and McCreary has a ton of ball production, too. And I kind of attributed that to him being very good at breaking on the ball.
Yes.
But you know that the Bills like physical tacklers, and I'll be the first to admit, I only saw about two or three of his games, not four or five. And he seems like a willing tackler, but he seems like more of the drag down variety,
yeah,
if you know what I mean. So I didn't know necessarily if that was a true match for Buffalo, knowing how much they like run support with their corners.
And maybe not, but McDuffie fits that bill no problem at all.
Yeah.
So
have you gotten a chance to look at him at all?
Yes. Yeah, he tackles like a missile.
Yes, he's physical. He clearly embraces, the way I always think about it when I watch these guys is, he embraces the physical nature of the game. The term I always use is he's got a strong playing personality. He struck me as the kind of guy that coaches would want him in their secondary. So McDuffie clearly fits that bill.
So what kind of chances are we looking at that one or both of those guys are on the board at, say, 25 or at 50 even?
Not 50.
Well, 25, I would think there's a very realistic chance. Again, you guys know me. I'm not a mock draft guy. I don't sit around thinking who's going to go with 21.
Right.
But I think it is somewhat realistic that one or both could be there at 25. And then you get also into the situation that, because I think they're probably looking for a starting corner, I would think that's the case. That if it gets to be 21 or 22, who knows what the Bills might do. But I think that McDuffie of the two, and Chris is 100% right, he certainly fits the bill more because of his willingness to embrace the physical part of the game.
Andrew Booth is more of a curious case because he just had sports hernia surgery here in late March.
Yeah.
Hasn't tested, as you know. Didn't do anything at the combine, obviously, because of that. But this is a guy, at least from what I've seen, that isn't afraid to use his body like a missile either.
No, no.
And the thing that stood out about me is the way he's able to high point the ball. He just seems to be, it seems to be a very natural thing for him. I don't know if there are other things that stood out to you about him, Greg.
Well, he's another, Chris, another scheme versatile corner. They played a lot of zone at Clemson in the games I watched. but they also played man, obviously. Everybody does. I'd say he's really competitive. He's physically tough. You're right. He's another corner that was aggressive and physical playing the run, willing to hit and tackle. You saw that on the tape. I would say, including McDuffie, that Booth is as physically tough as any corner in the draft. And he relishes it. I mean, he enjoyed it. Now, he only made 15 starts at Clemson. He's coming off the surgery. So there's probably a bit of a learning curve, but his college background certainly gave him extensive experience playing both man and zone. And I thought he was another guy, quite honestly, and you don't see this a lot with college corners. I thought he had a strong feel in zone. I thought he understood receiver location and distribution. He had his body and his eyes in the right place. And obviously for Sean and Leslie, because they play both man and zone, that zone portion is very, very important.
Give us an idea of which of the, if you could, you know, these guys that you say fit like Buffalo, give us a pro player that we could compare them to skill set wise that might give people a handle on. Because I know our listeners aren't going to go over and watch film on these. Some of them will.
Right, right. But
give us like a pro that would you could look at and say, you know, this guy's a little bit like that. Like with these guys like McDuffie and McCreary, who are kind of Bill's type of players. And I'm with you. I like Andrew Booth a lot because of his build and his attitude. Yep. And his, you know, his grit and his competitiveness. So give us an idea of some players, if you can, off the top of your head, who would equate to these guys. I don't want to put you on the spot, but.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's funny because McDuffie and McCreary, to me, were somewhat like Tre'Davious White.
Right.
And in terms of size, you know, because don't forget, White is not a 6'2", 210-pound corner. I think White was in the 5'11", 192 range, if memory serves me correctly. Yeah. And that's kind of what McCreary and McDuffie are. And, you know, a lot of people now like bigger corners. You know, we spoke about that with Gardner. You know, Gardner is more the exception than the rule. And if you can certainly get a guy who's 6'3 and moves like that, you love it. But there's not 100 guys like that. You know, I think that to me, I really thought of Tre'Davious White when I was watching McCreary and McDuffie. So that without being able to, you know, think of all the other corners, Steve, you know, it's that's the way I thought watching those two guys.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, Greg, because I even wrote under Andrew Booth a little bit of Trey White question mark. And the reason I wrote that when I was looking at Booth was because he tries to play sound, but he isn't afraid to take a chance every now and then. And more often than not, at least in the three or four games I saw of him, he guessed right. So Booth seems to have like natural instincts as to what might be coming in a given situation, time and score, down and distance type of thing. So it looks like the Bills will have a lot to choose from there. Well, maybe not a lot, but at least an option or two at the bottom of round one.
And the thing is we know corner is a premium position in this league. You can never have enough. So you never know how the draft's going to play out. You know, look, we all know that no matter what people say, there will be a run on quarterbacks. You know, that's just the way it works. So guys will get pushed down, and corner is a premium position.
Which of these? We got a handful of guys, like all the way down to Tariq Woolen, who's
toolsy
on this
kid.
Yeah, give us an idea. Did you pick a favorite? I mean, I know Sauce Gardner's the top guy. Is there a dark horse that you think? I think this guy might sneak in a little bit. Who is it that you think on this list? And you know, our viewers are looking at a list of about 10 or 12 guys right now. Is there a dark horse that you like that you don't know if everybody else does?
There are certain guys that I've seen a little bit of and not a ton of. I don't necessarily think they absolutely fit what the Bills do. Like, I don't think Tariq Woolen fits what the Bills do, but yet he's, you could argue he's freaky. I mean, this is a kid who's 6'4 and an eighth and ran a 4.26 40 at the combine with a ridiculous 10-yard split, by the way, which is remarkable given his height. His 10-yard split was 1.49. He's got really long arms, and his vertical jump was through the roof.
Yeah, 42-inch vertical.
Yeah, 42-inch vertical. Yeah, that's not bad at all. Now, he's a guy who began his career as a wide receiver. He's only played corner for 2 years. But he's got premium size, length, speed for an outside corner. He's an outside corner purely. So he has elite athletic and physical traits, you know, and as we were just discussing, he was a combine superhero. But, you know, he played a lot of mirror match press man. Length matters in that kind of coverage. Because he could match vertical releases, and then he could play the ball even when he was not necessarily in great situations to, you know, to play it because of his length. But, of course, that long frame also negatively impacts your transition and change of direction. You know, you become a little segmented when you have to do that, a little sticky. So, you know, I think he's an ascending type player. I don't know if he would fit the Bills.
So I haven't watched him yet. Greg, how would you assess his hip flip and what, in light of what you just said, you know, being Wollen, so high cut? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a work in progress, and okay, he may never be, you know, he may never be as fluid and smooth with his lateral agility as some others simply because of the long legged, high cut nature of his body type. He can't change his body frame.
Yeah.
So, but kind of, he'll have other traits that work for you, obviously.
What kind of team, what kind of defense draft, if he falls in the perfect defensive scheme, where is it?
My guess is he'd be better playing press than off, because off, you know, I think you then have to react more to the receiver. And I think, to me anyway, you know, receivers are trying to get you off your spot, and they're trying to get you to move, and then you've got to flip your hips and transition and change direction. I don't think that's the strength of his game. I think he'd be much better off, you know, playing press. But that's the way I would see it.
All right, Greg. Well, listen, thanks for schooling us up on the corners. You get back in the lab and do your thing, and we'll catch up with you next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Greg.
All right. Greg Cosell from NFL Films joining us here, breaking down the corners. I got to tell you, I feel better about what might be there at 25. Now, here's the thing. You know, Greg said he doesn't follow the mock drafts and the draft nicks and what they're saying and everything. Mm-hmm. The general consensus is Gardner, Stingley, McDuffie are all going to be off the board long before the Bills pick.
Right.
The concern here is that there is a run on corners in the early 20s. And if that happens, right, the Bills could really be left out in the cold from a value perspective when they're on the clock at 25, which then means, in all likelihood, they wait on taking a corner at least another round, maybe two. And that's when, you know, you have a drop-off. There'll be a precipitous drop-off. So it'll be interesting to see. Kair Elam is a guy that Greg had not looked at yet. I have.
He's been mocked to the Bills, and a lot of fans have chimed in.
Kids put together.
Yeah, he's got some traits.
6'1.5", 191, ran a 4.39 at the combine. He's built and he hits like a safety. Physical player. Brings the wood on every single tackle and seems to have the athleticism to play outside. His body control, and people hear body control and they're not really sure what that means, but when the ball is in the air and you might not be in proper position to make an easy catch, the way he can contort his body to make the difficult catch or pass breakup is pretty impressive. He is a natural athlete. And unlike Tariq Woolen, who is high cut and is 6'4 and has trouble transitioning, this guy finds it a lot easier. And he's got great length, which, you know, more and more, a lot of these NFL teams, they want length in their corners. So you can make more plays on the ball by reaching in, raking something out, tipping right, something away. He's got that. But is he a fit for the Bills? I don't have enough of a trained eye to answer that. So
right,
we'll have to see. But he's a guy that's probably going to be there at the bottom of round one, may even sneak into round two.
Maybe it's – and I know this, that high in the draft, even though it is number 25, it's the first round, and the Bills like traits.
Yes.
You get a guy who looks like – the part.
The guy that's grown on me is the Andrew Booth kid from Clemson, because
he
hasn't
like
tested. He's got the sports hernia surgery. He's supposed to be ready by training camp, at least because it's usually a 4-month rehab from sports hernia surgery. He had it in March, so you go April, May, June, July, so he should be okay. by then. But I just like this kid's attitude. He plays. He loves hitting, but he doesn't. He doesn't just throw himself into a play where, you know, he'll miss a guy going 100 miles an hour. He brings it every single time. Strong, technical, open field tackler, and I just like that. He's the kind of corner, because you see a lot of corners come out, Steve, in the draft. They'll make a lot of plays on the ball. He doesn't just make a play on the ball in contested catch situations. He's coming down with the pick. That's how competitive he is, and I think that speaks to the kind of player, the DNA that you hear all the time Coach McDermott talk about. He's got Bill's DNA, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and I say this too. These guys, and we've got a list like today. We were looking at seven different guys we had on our list. I don't know if we got to all of them, all the way down to Tariq Woolen. These guys come in here. They all have, aside from Sauce Gardner and maybe Derek Stingley, Kyler Gordon, those guys, the guys at the very top, most of these guys have some warts. You get further down, and you get into guys who are really good if they're in the right spot. And I like that about this group, thinking maybe the Bills could wait all the way until 50, and it'd be a guy who none of us have heard about, but who jumps off the page trait-wise. And they'll take somebody else at 25 or a different position at 25, a different player at 25, and you'll still be able to get a guy with some traits at 50. Maybe. But these names give me hope that and remind me that that happens once in a while. And so we'll see. And plus, the bulk of this draft is somewhere between 15 and 60 is what, you know, was what our guy Jim Nagy told us. You said it was like between 20 and 50. Well, the Bills are right there. We'll see.
Gordon is kind of an enigma to me. Physically gifted beyond belief, but I felt like in college he kind of relied on his athleticism too much. And you see a lot of players like that. They're so athletically gifted, they can get away with it at the college level by not subscribing and being completely committed to technique. And my only fear with him is there's going to be a learning curve because he's got to commit to technique. His athleticism is not going to allow him to get by, not in this league. You got to have athleticism, but you better have technique to come along with it. And I think he's going to have a little bit of a learning curve. I was very high on him early in the draft process, but as I'm seeing more and more of these corners and getting a chance to look at some of them, there are guys with a lot more technical polish than him. So it's going to be very interesting to me to see where he goes. You look at Kyler Gordon, and, you know, body type-wise, he looks more like a safety to me. But, you know, who knows? He ran a 4.52, which is more of a safety territory, but we'll see. We'll see where they all go. And
still a long way to go. We got a month before it happens, so 4 weeks anyway. So,
I'm really curious to see if the cornerback value is going to be there for the Bills at 25. Some people think it will be, like Greg. Others think, no way, Jose. The first three are going to be off the board by the first 16, 17 picks, and then there's a drop-off after that to 4, 5, and 6. And some people think there might be another run in the early 20s right in front of Buffalo. So they may see an option there. They may not. And I guess that's the beauty of the draft. You just – like a box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get.
We'll find out when we get here.
Yeah. We have an interesting story that we will cover when we come back from break. It is DK Metcalf, the Seattle Seahawks wide receiver, who is defying any and all logic about a professional athlete's nutrition plan. We will explain that to you when we return next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And we told you before the break, we've come across an intriguing and somewhat disturbing nutrition plan on the part of Seattle Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf. Recently, he sat down with Kevin Garnett. I believe this is Kevin Garnett's podcast, which also has a video component to it. And he was interviewing DK Metcalf, and they were getting into, you know, being a professional athlete, all this stuff. And Kevin Garnett is fully expecting to get a pretty intelligent answer when he asks him about his nutrition and what he puts in his body and this and that. And DK Metcalf, suffice to say, made Kevin Garnett's mouth drop. Here's a short snippet from that conversation.
I'm a candy type person.
Oh, what?
I eat one meal a day, drink one coffee, and eat like 3-4 bags of candy.
Man, define bags of candy, man. Jelly like beans?
See, I'm a gummy type of guy. See, you get your lifesavers.
Come on, man. Stop, man. Come on, hold on, man. So you finna go through a structure, a bag of candy. You about to go through the whole. Okay, let's hear this.
All right, I'm just take you through yesterday. So yesterday I woke up, worked out again, came home, showered. I'm hungry. Run to Starbucks, get a quick coffee. That's gonna hold me till like 4-5 o'clock. This 12. Okay. So it's gonna hold me for like 4 hours.
Dang.
Around 4:30, I order some candy and a water. So I got, what did I get yesterday? Got the Skittles gummies. Then I got the Lifesaver Creations. They're the same size bag, so I just mix them.
So it's safe to say we're going to see a DK gummy at some point, right?
Yeah, okay. For sure.
Okay, y'all heard it. Another certified moment.
Hey. Yeah. Get the gummy, get the candy, get the water, eat that. That's going to hold me to like 8 o'clock where I'm having dinner, 8, 9. And then I eat dinner, go to sleep.
That's an everyday thing? That's Monday through Friday, Monday through Sunday, Monday through Monday? You eating candy like that, huh?
Yeah.
So, what do you think about that, Steve? Being a former professional athlete yourself, I need to get your opinion on this.
Needless to say, that when the end of DK's career comes, it's going to come really fast and a little bit too soon.
So, nutrition is that important?
You cannot out-train your diet. You can't out-train your diet. I get the fact.
Now, hold on a second. We all remember during the pre-draft process the photo of him and A.J. Brown together in the weight room where they looked like – they didn't even look human.
Right. They looked like –
ripped up.
It's like Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
It was the X-Men, yeah. Or the
– You
it was,
saw it.
It was Avengers. Yeah, that's him.
I mean, he had an 8-pack.
Yeah.
How do you do that, eating 3 bags of candy a day?
I don't know if he did
every
that
day.
I don't know that he did that then, but yeah, the guy is a special athlete, and pro athletes, of his caliber, they're built different.
That's not fair.
It is not fair.
He gets to eat 3 bags of candy a day, and he looks like that. Come on.
Now you say too. He got up. He works out twice.
Okay.
He works out twice, then goes home and showers, then has coffee. And a couple of bags of candies to get through the day and get till that night.
3 bags of candy. I mean, he's really lucky. In all seriousness, he's lucky he's not diabetic. That's a lot of sugar.
Well, he's young.
And he's probably burning a lot of it off.
He's young. And it might give him problems later.
That's a lot of sugar.
It's like a pound and a half of sugar. Think about it. It's like 2.5-3 pounds of sugar.
I don't know if it's that much, but it's
bags of candy?
Well, in fairness, he did say single serve bags. So it's not like one of those family size bags that he's chowing down.
Yeah.
It's like, so for example, those square shaped bags that are probably a good 10, 12 ounces of candy. It's probably one of those.
I don't know. Well, I don't. It's still too much. I'll say this: if it is one of the small single-serving bags, like the little handful that you get,
I don't know if it's that small.
I get that because there's not enough calories in that, and that's the key to it: it's calories, and sometimes it's the quality of the calories.
Yeah, that's empty calories.
Yeah, it's empty. Now the meal he has probably at 8-9 at night can be probably whatever he wants, but it's about the calories you eat and the calories you burn. If you burn as much as you can eat whatever you want.
This convinces me, though.
They're different.
It's 90% genes.
Yeah, some of it is.
Because you don't get to look like that either.
That's correct.
90% of the population does not get to look like that eating 3 bags of candy.
Brownie, the guy's 6'4".
I realize not everybody trains the way he does. I realize not everybody's 6'4", with arms like vines, and legs like tree trunks. I get that. But
some guys are like you and me. We're 5.5 feet tall, and, we lose our hair.
Me more than you. The only other, I was trying to, so when I heard this, I was trying to think of another NFL player, professional athlete, whatever, who was like a junk food junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered one. He was also a wide receiver. Fast food junkie. Every day.
Who was it, Stevie?
Marvin Harrison.
Oh, there you go.
He ate McDonald's 7 days a week.
Okay.
Now, I don't think it was every meal, but every lunch or every dinner, well, one or the other.
They've got a little bit of a varied menu. I mean, you get a fish sandwich, chicken sandwich, and a burger. Fries. You can't do it, but you can't go in there and not get
now,
fries.
Now, he did
so
that every
that.
Day. He wasn't a big guy. He didn't look like an Adonis, and he played for 15 years, and he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I get it. He will be, yeah. So,
is that genes again?
A little bit, yeah. Plus, and I'll say this too.
Come on.
There is a level of hard work that you put in that will negate a lot of bad decisions you make with food and drink. So, you know, there is all of that in there as well. And there's a base level of fitness that you get when you're in college and you start, you come out of high school. Some of these guys start lifting young, but once you cross the bridge of puberty and you start lifting like you mean it, mm-hmm. and do stuff more than just body weight exercise, when you start benching twice your body weight and that kind of stuff, you start to build up a level of hard work and ethic, and you get into the habit of working out all the time. You can overcome a lot of stuff, but I've heard it said, and I believe it, you can't out-train your diet. And the one thing that does save him, one meal a day, that's big, and that's hard to do. It's really hard to do. I've tried that and done it, like sometimes involuntarily because I'm busy or whatever, but that's hard to do. And it's about calorie intake, empty or not.
So that's how he gets away with it.
That's how he gets away with it, yeah. It's the calorie intake.
If he was eating three squares and that candy on top of it,
right.
He might be in
then
trouble.
He's got a problem. Then he's got a problem.
So that's his, yeah. That's his hack.
Yeah, that's
his
the
nutrition
hack.
It's
a little bit like the I can't remember maybe the keto diet where you do intermittent fasting and you eat inside a window.
Yeah.
And you get it on a schedule. But that's what it's about. It's about the amount of calories he takes in. Now the candy bags makes it sound like he's Halloweening it every day.
Yeah.
And I doubt that that's the case. But yeah, that is he could do better.
He could do better.
Could
and
do
the
better.
Look on Kevin Garnett's face said it all to me. Like, he's just like, how can you,
he's gotta
as
watch
a professional athlete, with the amount of money you make, even think about compromising it with such a simple thing as candy? Like, to Kevin Garnett, who is as dedicated a professional athlete as you'll find and went to the NBA straight out of high school and played for a long time.
Ever, 19 years, I think, right?
To not make that kind of sacrifice, which I know in Kevin Garnett's mind is simple. It's not even a question. It's out. Right. Maybe in the off season, I'll have, a treat. Maybe on Halloween, I'll have something. But I'm that's not a staple of my diet.
Right.
Be interesting to see if it catches up with him in any way, shape, or form. But, yeah, you're probably right. The one meal a day probably saves him. Let's go to the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag, which is brought to you, as always, by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Nick, with the first question, asks, should we limit Von Miller's snap count in the regular season to preserve him? I know he usually has a high snap percentage, but what if we just use him on passing downs and late-game drives? A bunch of sacks early in the year won't mean much if he's too beat up for the playoffs. What do you think of that?
Yeah, they're going to be judicious with him. They did the same thing with Jerry Hughes. He'd get a day off after about week two, week three of the season. He's got a day off every day.
In practice. Practice
every day.
Get a Wednesday off.
You get a Wednesday off or a Thursday off, whichever. He'll get a day of the week off to stand around and watch, and that'll be it. And plus, in the games, I mean, we've seen this. Nobody gets more than, what is it, like 45%? The highest guy was
at the end of the
almost
season,
got half.
Yeah, at the end of the season, some of, like, Harrison Phillips was playing a lot. He was getting about 60 to 62% of the snaps.
And that led the team.
That was a very, very high end of the spectrum.
That'll be what Vaughn sees. And don't forget, this is a club that's been as healthy as anybody over the last couple of years in the NFL, and it's not by chance. They take care of these guys throughout the regular season. Von Miller's they're going to use Von Miller where they need him. And you're right. He's going to see a lot of fourth quarter action in games, I would think. I would think he's going to be in there when they need a stop. He's on the field. And they'll go like that until they see a need for a change.
I mean, they even did that with some of their offensive players last year. Because in 2020, Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley hit a little bit of a wall when they got to the playoffs. So in an effort to preserve them for the playoffs, they paced them through the season a little bit. Josh Allen admitted to that, you know, with Diggs, and Sean McDermott confirmed it when I asked him. Yeah, we were conscious of pacing them through the season, especially knowing there's one extra regular season game now. So, yeah, I think it is a practice that they will absolutely put into place for Von Miller.
And it's no accident. The Bills were playing better football than anybody in the NFL at the end of the last season and into the playoffs. I mean, they put together a stretch of games that was unbelievable. And in large, doing large measures, they were fresh and healthy.
Yeah,
I mean, it was like opening day for them when the playoffs began. And that was an amazing accomplishment by Sean McDermott and the sports science people on the other side of the wall here. Those people, they're in there today. I mean, the place is a beehive today, and it's you know, April 1st. Yeah. And they got people buzzing around there, guys rehabbing, guys working out. It's not an accident, and they work really hard at that. So, yes, it's a good question. Are you know, how are they going to make sure Vaughn gets through the season? I would say absolutely unequivocally yes. And they'll do it to make sure a guy who's making $20 million this season is going to be there when they really, really need him in the playoffs.
Jack asks, what are the odds Bills select a punter in this month's draft? I'm not sure they'd want to spend a third or fourth rounder on the punt god, but they definitely need to improve at punter after Hawks' shaky season. Could they consider a move like they did drafting Bass 2 years ago to battle the vet? Answer, yes. And proof of that, I think, comes in the fact that they reworked Hawks' contract, where if they choose to go in a different direction, they can release him and they'll have no discernible cap hit on their books of any penalty.
We were talking earlier, this kid called the punt god, Matt Ariza is his name.
Yeah.
He's going to get drafted.
He'll go earlier.
He's going to get drafted.
Yeah.
I don't know who it's going to be, but he's too unique a talent not to be with somebody.
Break time for us here. When we come back, one last question from the mailbag. Thoughts on a potential trade up in round one with players going out for the pick coming in? We'll discuss next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back. One Bills Live is the show. Steve and I almost ready to go. We're both headed to RJ Night. Reminder to get into your seats early tonight. It is a pre-game ceremony when RJ's banner gets raised to the rafters.
We've been told to call it a banner ceremony.
A banner ceremony. Fair
banner
enough.
Banner ceremony.
So make sure you're in your seat. 6:40 is when the festivities get underway, or the ceremony gets underway.
Yes.
So be prepared for that. Get in your seats early. Doors open at 5. It's a sellout tonight, so it will be crowded. So make sure you
plan on traffic.
Yeah, so got to plan ahead tonight for sure.
Man.
Want to remind you, the latest episode of our Bills by the Numbers podcast, presented by FanDuel, is out and available for you on any podcast platform you might use. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or even on YouTube if you want to watch us and listen to us at the same time.
Good stuff by fans.
There is one final question from the mailbag, Steve. Your thoughts on the reports out there that the Bills have reached out to teams to trade up in the first round for one or two veteran players. We were just discussing this yesterday. Player for picks, much like we have seen through the course of the trades that have happened thus far this spring. Does it continue on night one of the draft, and are the Bills a part of it?
The Bills will probably talk to teams about it. We find out all this stuff. Everything that's on the radar of the NFL, Brandon Bean's made a call about it, right?
He's always working the phones.
He's always working the phones. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's been some conversations, but knowing him, there's probably been some he's turned his nose up at and some that he's pitched that have been shot down as well.
This is the time of year where you have exploratory conversations.
Right.
They don't really gain traction unless they get revisited by those same two clubs again, and then maybe it goes a little bit further, or maybe it just dissipates into thin air.
And they come back to that on draft night. You think back to the conversations you've had in the past. Say, well, you know what? Back in the second week of April, we had that conversation. Let's call them, see if we'll spring this on them, see what they say.
Or have they changed their mind? Are they still thinking along the same lines?
Or we've changed, and we'll say, hey, we'll sweeten that deal with this. How about that? You know, that kind of thing. So, I would say the Bills are a part of it, but I'll say a lot of teams are that wouldn't surprise you. I mean,
just because they're talking about it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Right. It's got to, you got to have a dance partner, and there's only 31 other clubs.
That's right. Does make it interesting, though.
See you tonight, Brownie.
See you at the arena, everybody. We'll catch you on Monday at 1.